welcome to Roots of Today, the podcast where the past meets the present. With every episode, we journey through time, uncovering the lessons, parallels, and connections between historical milestones and current events to create a deeper understanding of the compelling stories and issues that shape the news. Last week, Republican majorities in the House and the Senate passed a rescissions bill that would cancel over $9 billion in previously approved federal spending. Included in the cuts was financing that helped the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Fund, both PBS and NPR. And while this government funding is not the sole source of support for PBS or NPR, eradicating that support could cripple both operations. In the case of NPR, CPB-funded support for individual stations makes up around 8% of their revenue, and that can rise to as much as 15% in rural markets. Some Republicans on Capitol Hill framed the debate as a simple matter of budgetary priorities. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky stated, "I am not an enemy of public TV, but we have a $2 trillion deficit, and the only way is we have to cut spending." Senate Majority Leader John Thune from South Dakota expressed a similar sentiment, stating, "What we are talking about here is 0.1% of all federal spending, but it's a step in the right direction." However, others made no secret that this was also an ideological fight. Texas Senator Ted Cruz declared, "NPR and PBS have revealed their left-wing bias time and time again. If you want to watch the left-wing propaganda, turn on MSNBC. But taxpayers should not be forced to subsidize it." And GOP Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia added, "We believe that you all can hate us on your own dime." As expected, the vote created a firestorm of protest from industry leaders. PBS President Paula Kerger called the action devastating and said it goes against the will of the American people, warning it would leave smaller and rural stations forced to make hard decisions and potentially lead to closures. NPR CEO Catherine Maher highlighted that nearly 3 in 4 Americans rely on their public radio stations for alerts and news for their public safety, emphasizing the real-world impact on emergency communications. Reactions from Democrats were just as pointed. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois called it the meanest vote in Senate history and accused Republicans of using rescissions to weaponize funding against outlets like NPR, PBS, Sesame Street, and Global Aid. While Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, asked, "Why is Trump so hell-bent on gutting funds for PBS and NPR?" Trump, like past authoritarians, wants to control not just what we do, but also how we think. But lost in the media coverage over this fight is the fact that the Trump administration also intends to dismantle the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which includes programs such as The Voice of America and Radio Free Europe. These programs may not survive the chopping block, and the result will have greater ramifications than what amounts to a cut in the funding for PBS and NPR. In this episode, we are going to look at the history behind the Voice of America and other associated U.S. government programs, relics of the Cold War against Soviet communist expansion, and what the possible consequences might be if they disappear from the global playing field. As always, this is Alan, your host, reminding you to grab your coffee, tea, or whatever beverage you prefer, and sit back as we get underway. The Voice of America was officially launched on February 24, 1942, under the Office of War Information, shortly after the U.S. entered World War II, as a tool to counter Axis propaganda in German-occupied Europe. By mid-1942, it was broadcasting in dozens of languages. After the war, responsibility shifted to the State Department in 1945, amid congressional debate over the need for continued funding. The end of the war brought about a shift in the relationship between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, from one of cooperation as allies to an adversarial one following the partition of war-torn Europe into spheres of influence. Due to this change, the VOA was preserved as part of U.S. information programs into the early Cold War. In 1953, President Dwight Eisenhower established the United States Information Agency, or USIA, under which the VOA became its largest component. The VOA relocated its headquarters to Washington, D.C. a year later. In 1976, the VOA's formal charter was codified in law, requiring broadcasts to be accurate, objective, and comprehensive, and to reflect the full spectrum of American viewpoints. A statutory firewall was later enshrined in 1994 and reaffirmed in 2017 to protect VOA's editorial independence from political pressure. The mission of the VOA was to undermine communist regimes. To achieve that goal, the VOA served as a central instrument of Western soft power, aimed at peeling away support for communist regimes in Eastern Europe by broadcasting uncensored news and stories of democratic life. Its effectiveness is evidenced by Soviet jamming efforts and the testimonial accounts of defectors. The VOA's contributions to UN condemnations of Soviet aggression in Korea and its support for westernization in Italy illustrate its policy impact. Programming included news, cultural content, commentary, and music. Dissidents behind the Iron Curtain credited VOA broadcasts with informing and influencing their decision to defect. Broadcasts comparing life under communism versus the West helped undermine communist legitimacy, particularly in Italy and France, where communist parties declined in influence. The VOA's coverage of U.S. events, such as civil rights protests and Watergate, demonstrated journalistic integrity even when reporting on American government failings, further strengthening its credibility among foreign audiences. Latin America was a different story. The VOA's Latin America service began early, offering Spanish and Portuguese language programming focused on democratic values, human rights, and U.S. culture. While VOA rarely led directly to specific regime change in Latin America, its broadcasts provided alternative narratives in countries like Cuba and Nicaragua, supporting broader U.S. anti-communist efforts in the hemisphere. However, the VOA was not the only U.S.-backed media effort in the region. While the VOA itself was legally protected by its charter and firewall, other U.S.-funded media such as Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Radio Marti had closer links to CIA funding in earlier decades. These surrogate outlets broadcast content tailored to maligned regimes, often supporting anti-communist narratives and encouraging internal opposition movements. During the Cold War, the CIA engaged in numerous covert operations throughout Latin America to counter perceived leftist threats. In Latin America specifically, CIA-backed propaganda often flowed through local media channels. In 1954, the CIA orchestrated Operation PB Success, a covert action aimed at removing democratically elected Guatemalan President Jacobo Arbenz, whose land reform policies threatened the interests of the United Fruit Company and raised U.S. fears of creeping communism in the Western Hemisphere. Arbenz had expropriated uncultivated land, much of it belonging to United Fruit, for redistribution to poor farmers, a move labeled communist by U.S. officials, despite Arbenz's nationalist framing and lack of direct ties to the USSR. It must be noted that Arbenz agreed to pay United Fruit Company for the land at the value claimed by United Fruit for tax purposes. Radio broadcasts came from the Voice of Liberation, false flag radio transmissions supposedly operated by Guatemalan rebels. They were in fact scripted and produced by the CIA. They broadcast anti-Arbenz propaganda and spread false reports of military uprisings. The CIA also printed and distributed leaflets, forged documents, and fake news reports to sow fear and uncertainty among the public and military elite. While the actual rebel force led by Carlos Castillo Armas was small and ill-equipped, the CIA created the illusion of a large, well-supported uprising, prompting panic among Guatemalan military officers who refused to support Arbenz. Although the Voice of America was not directly involved in the CIA's disinformation campaign, its official news broadcasts provided a credible contrast to the more radical and false information coming from the Voice of Liberation station. The distinction helped maintain VOA's image as a more objective source of U.S. information, while other assets were weaponized to bring about regime change and created doubt of the U.S. involvement in the uprising. In the end, the operation succeeded. Arbenz resigned on June 27, 1954, and was replaced by the U.S.-backed Castillo Armas. The result was decades of political instability, repression, and civil war, with over 200,000 people killed in the subsequent internal conflict. Nearly two decades later, the CIA used the same media disinformation playbook to sow unrest and bring down the duly elected Chilean president, Salvador Allende. Allende was a Marxist, and his election in 1970 alarmed the Nixon administration and U.S. corporations with interests in Chilean copper and telecommunications. The CIA responded with Project Fubelt, also known as Track 2, a multi-phase covert operation to prevent Allende from taking office and later to undermine his presidency. Ultimately, it led to his violent ouster on September 11, 1973. The CIA funneled over $1 million to Chilean newspapers, most notably El Mercurio, the largest conservative daily. The funds supported editorials, news stories, and front-page articles that criticized Allende and promoted economic chaos and fear of communism. At the same time, the Nixon administration worked to cripple the Chilean economy by cutting off foreign aid and influencing international lending institutions to deny Chile credit. The media echoed narratives of economic catastrophe, linking it to socialist mismanagement. False information was spread to create a sense of urgency and panic, including fabricated reports about arms shipments from Cuba and Soviet advisors infiltrating the government. Behind the scenes, the CIA cultivated relationships within the Chilean military, offering covert support and moral backing for a coup. The eventual military overthrow was led by General Augusto Pinochet, who established a brutal dictatorship. While the VOA did not directly disseminate anti-Allende content, it continued reporting on Chile, generally aligning with the U.S. government's diplomatic stance. Unlike CIA-backed assets, VOA maintained a tone of professionalism, avoiding overt propaganda. Similar to the operation against Arbenz in Guatemala, the seemingly unbiased broadcasts of the VOA created a feeling of legitimacy that the covert CIA media blitz was coming from Chilean sources and not the United States. This broader ecosystem of U.S. media influence, from covert disinformation to official broadcasts, worked in tandem to erode Allende's support and justify intervention. Both operations demonstrate the dual nature of U.S. media strategy in the Cold War. Overt broadcasting by the VOA emphasized credibility, long-term persuasion, and democratic values. Covert media from the CIA sought short-term disruption through lies, disinformation, and regime manipulation. In Guatemala and Chile, the CIA's use of media was integral to destabilizing democratic administrations and replacing them with authoritarian regimes. These actions were part of a broader Cold War pattern that prioritized anti-communism over democratic consistency. The long-term consequences were catastrophic. Human rights abuses under the authoritarian regimes that followed democratically elected governments led to the torture and deaths of upward of 250,000 people. In Chile, the people are still dealing with the aftermath of the Pinochet regime's practice of simply disappearing dissidents, murders that make it impossible for the victims' families to find closure. In Guatemala, the result was a constant war and genocide against the poor and indigenous members of society. Recent research shows that CIA-sponsored regime changes across Latin American countries, including Ecuador, Brazil, Chile, Bolivia, and Panama. This led to significant declines in democracy, civil liberties, and economic growth. 5 years post-intervention, per capita income was on average 10% lower and political freedoms sharply reduced. These long-term consequences underscore the destabilizing legacy of covert operations. Tragically, CIA actions in Latin America created a permanent sense of disillusionment with the U.S. across the hemisphere, where many view American interventions as self-serving and hypocritical. The question before us now is this: is there a legitimate mission for the VOA in today's world? Remember, it was created to provide people trapped in authoritarian regimes news and other information they would otherwise lack due to the strict censorship policies of those authoritarian governments. That remains a righteous and valuable goal, despite the short-sightedness of the CIA. Today, the U.S. needs to be a good partner in Latin America and regain the credibility that CIA actions shredded. However, the point may be moot. Earlier this year, President Trump issued Executive Order 14290, which ordered the dismantling of the U.S. Agency for Global Media and drastically cut funding for Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and others. The VOA previously reached 360 million people weekly in nearly 50 languages. Without these broadcasts, the U.S. loses a critical soft power tool. And this fact is not lost on the authoritarian regimes. State-backed media from China and Russia have begun filling the void left by U.S. media withdrawals, particularly in Africa, Latin America, and Asia. These outlets promote authoritarian narratives and increase disinformation. Analysts argue that these Trump's cuts mark a retreat from longstanding democratic influence efforts. The loss of trusted news sources empowers autocratic regimes and reduces U.S. ability to shape global discourse on human rights and governance. At a time when the United States needs to regain its credibility and use a non-military tool to spread freedom and democracy and support the expansion of civil rights in the world, we are instead shrinking from that responsibility. These cuts mark a retreat from long-standing democratic influence efforts. The loss of trusted news sources empowers autocratic regimes and reduces U.S. ability to shape global discourse on human rights and governance. The VOA was designed to spread freedom today, so we could avoid conflict with authoritarian regimes tomorrow. It's another example of the well-known adage of pay me now or pay me later. We have decided to pay the price later. That concludes this week's episode. If you find this podcast informative or entertaining, please like and subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. The same goes if you tune in on YouTube. Also, if you have anything you would like to add to the conversation, please leave a comment. Barring any news event that screams for the attention of this podcast, next week we'll dive a little deeper into the overthrow of Chilean President Salvador Allende in 1973. It is a fascinating event, one that has damaged U.S. credibility in Latin America, and one that Americans should know. Until next time, remember this: get informed and fight to keep your political representatives accountable. Your freedom depends on it.